Welcome to the Stabbin' Stylists Podcast. I'm Randa.
And I'm Ashley.
We are just two stylists who love true crime and hair, and we're going to tell you about both.
This is a true crime podcast. These stories may be disturbing to some. Listener discretion is advised. Talking about bond repairing stuff like Olaplex. What are other ones? K18. I think so many different companies have them now.
Most lines have their own like bond building product
version.
Yeah. Or it's just built into the color, into the lightener now.
It's in my lightener.
It's in mine.
I was an Olaplex girly. You remember like 2 years ago, the old salon Olaplex girly. Now, we were actually joking about this the other day. People do not buy Olaplex. We were just saying before we hit record, I don't feel like everybody needs it. If your hair, if you're super bleached, if you have damaged hair, yes, but even then, not every shampoo.
No, there is such a thing as too much of a bond builder.
Yeah.
But most bond builders are just heavy on the proteins.
That's exactly what I started to say. It's proteins. And so you can over protein your hair.
Yeah. And we've talked about this is that there is such a thing as too much protein on your hair, which will make your hair dry. It'll make your hair brittle. It'll make your hair frizzy. So it can create just as much damage as it can repair.
Right. Well, and like Olaplex conditioner, once again, I used to be a fan of it, so I'm going back on everything I said. Mm-hmm. But the only thing it was good for was rebuilding your hair. It did not do anything for my hair. Like, it doesn't give you really moisture.
Yeah, if your hair is already healthy, it's not
going to
build on that. There's nothing for it to fix then.
My favorite thing lately, and you're going to laugh and be like, really? Leave-in conditioner. I have never used leave-in conditioner on my hair before, and I have the hair type that needs leave-in conditioner.
Yeah.
But I have noticed, obviously, I was just out in, like, the sprinkling, but I think it looks so much smoother than it ever has.
Yeah. Leave-in conditioner helps me a lot with shine.
I could see that. That new Amika stuff I just used, the hydrating stuff, my hair got oily.
What?
I know. Like,
yeah, we've been on an Amika kick here lately. Before that, I think it was Verb.
Yeah.
Which I still like Verb stuff.
I sort of say the leave-in conditioner I use and the oil I use are both Herb.
Yeah, I also like the Kenra Platinum Gloss as a serum oil, or like an oil, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I do too.
It smells like candy.
Here lately at the salon, we have been trying to figure out what products everyone likes and what we're pushing the most of.
Amika's been a hit.
Yeah, it really has because Amika smells so good. I don't know. That wasn't really much of even a hair pack. That was just kind of like ranting, but people like that, I guess. I don't know.
At that some point, I'm sure somebody will say a crossword about the ranting, but it hasn't happened yet.
Trigger warning, this episode contains graphic crime.
So when Randa showed up, I was like, I'm not even telling you about this one because this is like a really just randomly weird thing to run across. So you've heard of Lewis and Clark, right? Like the explorers. Did you know that Meriwether Lewis died in Tennessee? And still to this day, no one is sure if it was a murder or a suicide. Is that not?
Well, let's go.
So let's go. So anyone who doesn't know, the Lewis and Clark expedition was basically a United States expedition back in 1804. They pretty much had just purchased Louisiana, and Captain Meriwether
was the Louisiana purchase was a much bigger swath of land than just Louisiana today.
Louisiana purchase had just happened, and there was the Corps of Discovery, and that was actually part of the Army. It was civilian volunteers too, but they were all these people that were like, "All right, let's find out what's on the other side."
So their job was to go
explore
and go look.
Yeah. Okay. Clark and 30 members left Camp Dubois, which is also Camp Wood, Illinois. He met Lewis and 10 other members in St. Charles, Missouri. So they kind of like went over, met them.
We all convene, and here we go.
And then they go up the Missouri River all the way to Oregon. It began in March, and it ended in September. So, I mean, this took like months of them literally hiking across wilderness. So they come back and, you know, they're these celebrated explorers. They've been on these awesome adventures and life is just starting, right? Lewis's life completely starts unraveling. Like, shit's not going good for him. He becomes governor of the new Louisiana territory,
well,
he's
seen the most of it.
And he really, his life dream after going on this big thing was he just wanted to settle down, get married, publish his story. But instead, he's having to have this desk job and be like a governor of a new territory. And he's like, this is not what I was looking for in
my
life.
He's like, this is a lot of work. I'm trying to retire.
Exactly. And he was like, I just want to get married. I'm 35 years old. I'm old as hell in these times.
Oh, yeah, for real. Like, yeah. He was an old man.
Yeah. So at this point, he's thinking like he's done.
He's like, I gotta have kids if I'm gonna have kids.
3 years into this, he has to go to Washington, D.C. to sign some financial stuff.
That's quite a trip.
And he stops in Memphis. Really, the only accounts we have of what happened to him that night come from the inn owner's wife. One of them is from a letter that his friend had talked to her, and it was like 2 weeks after he died. The other one is a friend that came, just so happened to stop there, actually stayed in the same room he did, and it was like a few months after he died.
Okay.
So this is the 1800s of it all. This is kind of...
It's all hearsay.
Right. And it's all from letters written by other people, not her.
Okay.
So he arrived at Grinder's Stand alone about sundown, and he asked for a night's lodging and said that his servants were coming behind him with all of his stuff. Uh-huh. She even said he was wearing a blue and white striped traveler's duster. He takes off his saddle, he takes it into the inn, and he asked for alcohol, but she noted that he hardly touched it. He didn't really even pay much attention to it. So his servants arrive. John was like his right-hand man. And he goes to John and he's like, hey, I thought I had some gunpowder, but I don't. Can I have some of yours? I guess back then that was a normal thing just to ask for, because John gives
just
him...
Just doling out shots of gunpowder?
Yeah, just give him a little bit. Okay. But Miss Grinder says that she didn't hear the reply. She just heard him ask that and thought, huh, kind of weird. So the servants stayed out in the stables because... Unfortunately, we're using the word servants, but they were enslaved people.
There it is.
John was paid at some point, but we'll get back to this. That'll be end of the story wrap up. But the word servant was used a lot. I only assume that it was enslaved people.
Again, 1800s.
Right. So when I say servant, I don't mean that any disrespect. That's just the way it was written. So it was the easiest way to write it in my notes without having to go through that spill every time.
Well, but, and if I'm not mistaken, back then it might have been a mix of both paid servants and enslaved people.
And that's what I wonder, too, because John was like his right-hand dude. And so John did get paid. So I'm wondering if he did, but others didn't. I don't know the whole semantics of it all.
Unclear is what we're hearing.
So after they go out to the stables, he begins like pacing back and forth. And the woman says sometimes it would seem he was about to like walk up to her and say something, but then he'd just stop and suddenly wheel around and take off walking the other way. It was just really a weird interaction.
Why are we brooding, sir?
She calls him down to dinner. He sits down. He literally just eats a couple mouthfuls, then just springs up and starts talking to himself crazy as fuck. She said in a violent manner. Then he lights his pipe and then just all of a sudden sits down and starts kindly talking to her and said, "Madam, this is a very pleasant evening." He finished his pipe, stood up, And he starts pacing back and forth and just kept saying, "What a sweet evening this is." She makes a bed for him. And he's like, "No, I prefer to sleep on the floor. I'm good on the floor." He called them to bring his bearskins and his buffalo robe. She was not feeling comfortable. She was like, this man.
He was weirded out.
Yes. And she had kids, too. So, you know, back then, the kitchen wasn't in the house. It was in the kitchen house. So she was like, we're going to go stay over here.
It was very formal back then, too. So him acting this out of pocket was like big red.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, to the point she couldn't sleep because she was just... It was
weird. Don't come in here tonight and kill me.
Well, and not just that. The kitchen house is only a few feet away from his bed, so she can, or bedroom, so she can literally hear him. He's just like still pacing and still talking. She said he was talking to himself like a lawyer.
Just like trying his own case?
Yes. Just like pacing around. So sometime before sunrise, she hears a pistol shot. Then she hears something fall on the floor. So she hears a shot and a loud thud, followed by the words, "Oh, Lord." Then she hears a second pistol shot. A few minutes later, Lewis was at her door screaming out, "Oh, madam, give me some water and heal my wounds." Her enslaved girl, Melindy, was there that night. And she said that she was with Miss Grinder and the children and that the whole thing, they were just way too scared to go to the door. But through the logs, because you got to think, these are like log cabins.
Yeah.
So through the logs, they can see him stagger out the back door and he falls against a stump and he kind of sits there for a little bit. Then he crawls to a tree and collects himself up, pulls himself up, and he stood there for a minute and then he made his way back into the cabin. Miss Grinder can't remember how much time it was before he came back out and he didn't ask for water this time. He went to the well and they could hear the well and him getting water out. 2 hours later, when day broke, she sent two of her children out to the stables to get the servants because she was too scared to send anybody at dark because she was like, I don't know what the fuck is going on out here.
Yeah.
They found Lewis laying on a bed in the cabin and he was actually still conscious at this point. And a piece of his forehead was blown away, exposing his brain. But it says he really hadn't even bled much.
What? Head wounds bleed.
He had also been shot in his side, too. The bullet had went through him. He's literally begging them, please get my gun and shoot me. I cannot take this. Yeah. He said, I am no coward. And he kept repeating, I'm too strong. I am so strong and so hard to die. And then he was saying, don't be scared. I'm not going to hurt you. And we're like, dude, you can't hurt us, right? Like, are you okay?
Hold on. What else are you going to do?
He died 2 hours later. His friends immediately just assumed it was suicide.
Why would you shoot yourself in the side, though? I'm so confused.
At the time of his death, he actually had depressive tendencies. He was having financial troubles. They said he was probably an alcoholic, and they wonder if he had malaria.
Hey, one of the symptoms of malaria is mental confusion. Oh, if you don't get it treated properly, it can flare up every now and then.
See? So had he had malaria at one point?
Like, was he just running in a raging-ass fever and he was, like, confused?
And if they thought he had had bouts of dementia, that would make sense.
Schizophrenia also makes sense, but I doubt you could do a whole expedition out west and back.
And the thing is, like, the expedition...
And not get yourself in trouble, you know what I'm saying?
Only a few people died, so there weren't many deaths on the expedition. Right. But the thing is, their primary goal was to set up a system of trading posts, mm-hmm. and all the ones they established had already started to fall apart before the mission was even over. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so people thought, you know, well, he wasn't married, he was having these financial issues, this started falling apart. There's a story of a coroner's jury that was assembled by a man named Justice Whiteside immediately after the death.
I'm thinking malaria might have something to do with this.
The jury's decision was for suicide, but two of them said that it was for murder, but they were like, we don't know who did it. The thing is, there's no actual record of this. From what I've read, they did not actually start forwarding reports to the county courthouse until a decade after this happened. So this judges had their logbooks of where they kept all their stuff. Right. So like it would have been a Wayne's logbook, but the logbook is gone. So is this just kind of an oral tradition that this happened? Is this just part of the lure of it? Or did we don't know.
Yeah.
But supposedly in this report, it said that moccasin tracks and the print of an unusual rifle butt were found around the cabin the morning after. And the rifle butt's markings were recognized to be Tom Uranian's, who is an Indian that they think is a land pirate. They think that Robert Grinder, the owner, sold whiskey to the Indians. And that's why this man would be coming and killing someone on his property. But to me, it sounds like they just had a local Indian that they like to blame those kind of crimes on.
Some have them blame the native.
Right, basically.
I hate that. Yeah, why would he murder somebody who's staying in the inn?
Right. That doesn't make any sense. They were like, well, Lewis may have known of his land pirate. Lewis wasn't from that area, so why would he?
He wasn't even there for that.
Right. He just, that's where he was staying. So that literally doesn't make any sense. It sounds like that was just the easy person to point it to.
Yeah.
Like, those are moccasin tracks.
That's not a white boot. Yeah.
That's not a white boot. So, scenario two, Robert Grinder killed him. He was not even supposed to have been in town at the time. The wife was the only one there. They also say that Robert Grinder killed him to steal money from him to get some prime land in the county next to him. But that's blown out of the water because he didn't even purchase that land for 5 years. He was actually taken into custody for this, but he was released due to lack of evidence. And they actually were worried that because he was friends with the Indians would attack them in retaliation for them taking Robert Grinder in. Number four, Natchez Trace bandits killed him. Obviously, you've got to think that was a really prominent thing to happen at the time. People would literally just go up and down these roads because there was only one way to get anywhere.
Right.
So another one is they say that General James Wilkinson killed him. This was the previous governor of the Louisiana Territory, and that he was taking bribes from the Spanish government. John the Servant actually went straight to Thomas Jefferson, who was one of Mr. Meriwether Lewis's best friends, and he told him that he had committed suicide. Then he went to Lewis's family and was like, hey, I'm still owed $240 for my payment. And they were like, or you killed him. You killed him and you're extorting us. They were like, really?
If he was alive, I would have got paid.
Right. So they're laser focused in on John. 7 months later, John dies suddenly in Washington. Folklore has it that his throat was cut from ear to ear. But a man who he was boarding with wrote Thomas Jefferson and said that he deliberately ended his life with an overdose of a tincture of opium poppy that is dissolved in alcohol. I would say that's probably what happened since the boarder wrote that to Thomas Jefferson. I would say that saying that he was murdered was much more scandalized. Soon after that, Robert and Priscilla Grinder moved to a farm away from there. Tom Runyon's married one of their nieces, and they remained in the area. In 1848, there was a memorial that was built over his grave. 30 years later, a schoolteacher from Cherokee Nation visits this grave, and he's like, let me go talk to Miss Priscilla. I want to know her side of the story. At this time, she's in her late 60s, and her story has completely changed. Well, she says, after he showed up, three men showed up and he drew his pistol on them and drove them away and said that they had to leave. They were the ones that came back and shot him.
Now, why wouldn't you say that from the beginning?
Well, she also added a third pistol shot. She omitted her previous statement that she had sent her children to the stables and instead said that the servants were just coming out of the stables and they're the ones that found him.
They were just starting their day and they found him.
Yes. And she also said that John was wearing Lewis's clothes that he had arrived in.
Well, what was Lewis wearing? She didn't have a many pair like things to wear back then.
She said that whenever she asked about him, he was just like, oh, he gave them to me. She said that the servants searched for Lewis on the trail and found him badly wounded and dressed in like tattered up clothing. They brought him back to the cabin and he died. So basically, she jumbled up all the rumors of everything.
She just put it in a little ball and spat it back out.
Mm-hmm. But when I was like, that what? I even texted my mom and I was like, did you know that Lewis from Lewis and Clark died in Tennessee? Of Lewis and Clark. I feel like that you have to say that every time. But yeah, it sounds like a suicide, but still to this day, there are naysayers out there that think that he could have been murdered.
That's wild. That's really wild.
And the story, the main story that we hear only comes from her. Obviously, there were other servants there that can kind of say, no, we didn't find him on a trail and stuff like that. But we only have her account to go on.
She'd be lying.
That's the story of Lewis from Lewis and Clark. Thanks, guys.
Don't whistle in the woods at night.
Bye, y'all.